It's hard to say what philosophy is. Somebody, I've forgotten who, defined it as just thinking exceptionally hard. I've been interested in philosophy of religion, like if there's such a person as God, what is God like? What about human beings? Are they really just bodies, or are they just souls, or are they both souls and body combinations? And how could that be? You know, what would a body-soul combination be like? These are just questions that human beings think about or are inclined to think about, I don't know, just by nature. I got this phone call one day that said, you're going to get the Templeton Prize. It's a prize for progress in religion. Now, I don't know if I've made any progress in religion. I mean, I have since I was 2 years old, maybe. But religion is extremely important to me. It's sort of the center of my world. One's Christian commitments, in particular one's belief in God, ought to be integrated into one's whole body of belief. It's not just something separate, like going to church on Sunday might be separate from what you do the rest of the week. Rather, it's a central part of your whole intellectual structure. In fact, the basis of it, I was thinking. So in that way, to be integral is to have the belief in God not separate from these, from your other beliefs, but sort of integrated into them and perhaps the basis of them. I think one of the main characteristics of my work is that I am pretty thorough, pursuing things a long way, sort of trying to get as far down or achieve as much depth as possible. Other philosophers who aren't thorough, but they're hit and miss, but they're very inspiring. I doubt if I'm very inspiring. I'm just more thorough. But thoroughness is a virtue, too. J.L. Mackey was a philosopher at Oxford. As for his philosophical objections, the main one was the problem of evil, which is a serious question for Christians. If there really is such a person as God, why are all these terrible things happening in the world, things that God presumably disapproves of, maybe things that hurt him and wound him in some ways? And why is that the case? Why would God, if he's all-powerful, he could stop it? If he's all-loving, he would if he knew about them, and if he's all-knowledgeable, he would know about them. So why all this evil? That was basically his question. And part of the answer has to do with the fact that God gave human beings free will, and human beings have misused this autonomy, have used it to arrogate to themselves things that didn't belong to them, and to make themselves large in their own eyes and look down on other people and the like. That's what people have in fact done. The existence of evil doesn't just entail the non-existence of God, not by a long shot. It's certainly possible that there be such a person as God, and that his world has somehow fallen into evil, and that he permits evil for his own purposes, which we may or may not know about. With Thomas Aquinas, you find these proofs for the existence of God. So he's got the famous five ways. But that's not necessarily the only way to think about it. The first book I wrote was called God in Other Minds. I argued, well, these arguments for God's existence aren't all that strong. Then I looked into the question of why we believe in other minds, God in other minds. So I believe that I'm not the only being with a mind. I mean, I figure you've got one too, and I don't know, maybe a few others, who knows. But why do I believe that? Well, there's no very good argument there either. There is the so-called analogical argument for other minds, a kind of analogy between my behavior and your behavior, and since my behavior is accompanied by a mind, I might think yours is too. But it's not a very strong argument. So it seemed to me that belief in God and belief in other minds was pretty much in the same boat, epistemologically speaking. Then I went on to say, but belief in other minds is obviously perfectly rational. So I said, is belief in God. And these questions that philosophers confront have to be reconfronted in every generation. It's not like, you know, well, we had Plato, so we could take care of everything. Everything he said, we can just set that aside. Now we can go on to something else. These questions keep reoccurring and reoccurring in different form. And I just hope Christian philosophers continue, I hope there continue to be lots of Christian philosophers, and I hope they continue to work seriously at these problems.
Bill, this is a big prize, and it's been won by Alvin Plantinga. Talk about the Templeton Prize that Alvin Plantinga just won.
Alvin Plantinga has been awarded the 2017 Templeton Prize, which amounts to something like $1.4 million.
Wow.
I initially thought that this award was being given for work in science and religion, which is the area of interface that the Templeton Foundation is so dedicated to promoting. But in fact, this is an award that is much wider in scope than that. This is a Templeton Prize for one's contribution to spirituality or religion in the world. And so when you look at the people that have received it, many of them have had no contribution to make to the dialogue between science and religion. This award has been given to people like Billy Graham, Bill Bright, Mother Teresa, and so forth. Indeed, the definition of religion here is very broad. People like the Dalai Lama, who is the leader of Tibetan Buddhism, has received this award in the past. So this is an award for a contribution to spirituality or religion, very broadly conceived. And it's interesting that the Templeton Foundation would recognize the work of Alvin Plantinga in the field of philosophy and in the interface of science and theology as making a contribution to religion.
Christianity Today headline here is very encouraging. It says, Templeton Prize winner Alvin Plantinga, who proved God's not dead in academia. How about that?
Yeah, and that's certainly fair. Plantinga, through his work from the late 1960s on, has helped to spur the renaissance of Christian philosophy in our day. He's not only defended certain arguments for God's existence, such as the ontological argument, but also has defended the proper basicality of belief in God, that it's perfectly rational to believe in God. Indeed, he thinks you can be warranted in believing in God, not on the basis of argument and evidence, but in what he would call a properly basic way. One's belief in God and the great things of the gospel can be grounded in the witness of the Holy Spirit to the great truths of the gospel. So Plantinga has championed Christian philosophy and I think helped in large measure to put it back on the map of contemporary philosophy.
This article mentions you, Bill. It cites you as one of the cover stories that talk about Alvin's work and this renaissance of philosophy, and the 2008 cover story.
Right. Mm-hmm. I remember that now. That was on the revival of arguments for the existence of God. And I talked about contemporary proponents of the cosmological, the teleological, the moral, and ontological arguments for God's existence, all of which I've defended in published and debate scenarios, but also which have been defended by quite a number of Christian philosophers in our day.
Do you know what Dr. Plantinga is doing these days? I mean, he is retired. Is he still writing and speaking?
He is retired. He's 84 years old now, and I do not think that he is active philosophically. That's my impression, at least. But I haven't spoken with him personally in a number of years. When I heard this press release, I did send him congratulations via email, mm-hmm. for which he thanked me, but I haven't had any extended conversations with him about whether or not he's philosophically active at his age.
Bill, do you have a recommendation of where the layman ought to begin when reading Plantinga? Because we talk about him an awful lot, but
yes,
a lot of people have not.
He is my philosophical lodestar. I have sought to model my life as a Christian philosopher on both his example personally as well as his advice as to how Christians ought to do philosophy. He is a tremendous figure, and I think it's a great privilege to have been alive and working in this field during the time that Alvin Plantinga is around. It's so exciting to be in the field of Christian philosophy during the time that Plantinga is alive and working, as opposed to, say, back in the 30s and the 40s during the dark days of logical positivism and verificationism. If lay people wanted to access Plantinga's work, probably his little book, God, Freedom, and Evil, would be the best place to start. This is about the only popular level book that Alvin Plantinga has ever written. Robert Adams once said to me, I don't think Al Plantinga is capable of writing a popular level book because he is so academic and so careful in his scholarship. But God, Freedom, and Evil is on a semi-popular level, at least, and would introduce you to Plantinga's work on the problem of evil and the free will defense, as well as the ontological argument. He then wrote a little pamphlet called The Twin Pillars of Christian Scholarship, which is very good as well, and would introduce you to his vision of what Christian philosophy is all about. Beyond that, I think probably his very large book, Warranted Christian Belief, is one that the determined layman would find accessible. It's very long, but it's written in such a way that I think the layperson could understand it if he simply has the patience to work through a book of several hundred pages. I have heard through the grapevine that Plantinga is going to produce a popular level version of that book, and that would be very welcome for Christian lay people.
Yeah, because you really do have to stick with it, that book. And when he's talking about warrant, he's talking about epistemology, isn't he? I mean, whether you're warranted in holding a view. It's almost like another word for
he distinguishes between justification and warrant. Justification basically means, am I within my rational rights in believing something? And he thinks that it's relatively easy to show that Christians are justified in what they believe, in the sense that they're within their rational rights in believing as they do. But that doesn't mean that what they believe is true. He would also say that many Muslims would be justified in believing in Islam, given what they know. They're within their rights in believing this. Indeed, what he calls voodoo epistemologists could be within their rights in believing as they do, but they don't know the truth of what they believe. In order to have knowledge, you need to have warrant. And warrant would be that quality that, if accumulated in a certain amount, turns a rational belief into knowledge. And so Plantinga in this book tries to explain how it is that Christian belief is warranted, that we're not merely rational in believing in God and the great truths of the gospel, but we actually know them to be true.
Hmm. Bill, I tell you, there are not many Alvin Plantinga videos on YouTube, relatively.
I mean, Isn't that interesting? You know, I've never thought of that before, but you see, most of his life as a professional philosopher would have been involved in giving papers at academic conferences or scholarly presentations to departments of philosophy at various universities where he's invited to speak. And these wouldn't have been videoed and put up on YouTube. That's a very recent phenomenon that Alvin Plantinga probably hasn't participated in that much. Perhaps a Veritas forum here or there on a campus might capture a video of him. But
start with those. That might be a good starting point as well.
Yes.
And in every one of them, he, and that deep voice of his, talks about going out for football coach at Notre Dame. So you have to kind of wade through that at the beginning. Tells the same joke every time. But he speaks to New York University. They're there, but surprisingly very few, if you're in the habit of kind of beginning through YouTube, you might be a little
disappointed. Yes, and unfortunately, a great many young people are in the habit of beginning with videos rather than with print materials, with books and articles. And for planning, the majority of his corpus is in print materials, not in video form.
Well, Bill, I know you join, as you've expressed to Alvin Plantinga himself, congratulations to him from all of us.
Yes, well done, I want to say. He has been such an example and a model to all of us in this field. And I do think that the Templeton Foundation is quite right in saying that these are not contributions simply to academia, but that he has made a significant contribution to religion in our world. Christianity today is more robust and deeper because of the work and influence of Alvin Plantinga. And so his work will continue to reverberate for decades, if not centuries, I think, in promoting the cause of the kingdom of God.